A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel wrote in with something that I suspect is going to land for a lot of people. He says he's always described himself as more literate than numerate, the kind of person who'd rather read a paragraph than scan a spreadsheet. And he points out this basic mismatch. If you told him you have room for a few small electronics from Amazon, but avoid other discretionary purchases and try to cook in, stop ordering takeout more than once a week, he'd actually know what to do. But give him the same set of restrictions as numbers, and his brain just bounces off. The question he's asking is whether there are systems that work with a brain that thinks in words, not in columns. Not how do I force myself to become a numbers person, but what's already built for the brain I actually have. And I think that's the right question to ask. So today, we're asking, what if the problem isn't you, but the tool?
The thing is, finance is a numerate discipline built by numerate people for numerate people. And that's not a small club. It's the people who design the apps, write the textbooks, set the defaults. But roughly 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. scores at or below level 1 numeracy on the most recent PIAAC survey. That's the Program for the International Assessment of Adult Competencies. And level 1 means you can do basic arithmetic. Add, subtract, maybe multiply. But multi-step calculations are where it falls apart. So this isn't a niche problem.
And Daniel's not even in that group. He's a working professional who codes, ships software, writes technical documentation. The numeracy isn't absent. It's just effortful. The cognitive load of translating numbers into action is high enough that he'd rather not do it at all.
And that's the distinction that matters here. This isn't about capability, it's about cognitive fit. The concept is that forcing a verbal processor into a numerical workflow creates friction, avoidance, and shame, not better outcomes. And there's some interesting work on where this starts. Dr. C. Brad Quantz, a financial psychologist, published a piece in Psychology Today last year laying out how money scripts, the emotional responses we have to financial tasks, are wired before age 7. Before you can do long division, your brain has already decided whether money is scary, whether it's a source of security, whether you're the kind of person who's good with it or bad with it.
So by the time Daniel opens a budgeting app, he's not just doing math. He's activating a story he learned when he was 6.
Right. And if that story is numbers equal stress, then seeing a spreadsheet triggers the amygdala, the threat response, not the prefrontal cortex where analysis lives. You're not lazy. Your brain has literally routed the task to the wrong department.
The part of this I want to sit with is that the apps don't know that. They're built as though every user is a numerate, future-oriented, disciplined first person who wants to engage with their finances daily. And for someone like Daniel, daily engagement with numbers is aversive. It's not a habit he hasn't built. It's a thing his brain actively avoids.
And that avoidance compounds. You miss a day, then a week, then you're 3 months behind, and the shame kicks in. That's the cycle we want to break. So let's start with why the numbers themselves are the problem, not because they're hard, but because of what they trigger. The freeze response to numbers is real, and it's physiological. When someone with a negative money script sees a financial task, the amygdala fires. Heart rate goes up slightly. Cortisol levels shift. And the prefrontal cortex. The part that does rational planning gets deprioritized. Your brain is treating a budget spreadsheet like it's a predator. Functional MRI studies on math anxiety show reduced activity in the prefrontal cortex and increased activity in the amygdala during numerical tasks.
So the person isn't avoiding the budget because they're irresponsible. They're avoiding it because their brain is screaming threat.
And here's where the numeracy gap isn't about intelligence at all. Let's take a concrete example. Daniel gets told, spend 22% less on dining out. For a numerate brain, that's one step. Compute 22% of current dining spend, adjust behavior. For a verbal processor, that's multiple steps. First, find current dining spend. Then calculate 22% of that number. Then translate the result into a weekly or per meal limit. Then compare that to actual behavior. That's 4 cognitive operations, each one consuming working memory. But cut takeout to once a week. That's one step. You know what once a week means. You don't have to calculate anything.
The descriptive version is immediately actionable. The numerical version requires interpretation before it becomes action, and interpretation is where the cognitive load lives.
This is why most budgeting apps fail this audience. Mint, YNAB, every dollar. They assume the user wants to engage with numbers daily. They're built around the idea that more data, more granularity, more frequent check-ins produce better outcomes. And for someone with high numeracy and low math anxiety, that's probably true. But for the literate-numerate mismatch, daily engagement is the thing you're trying to avoid. The app becomes a source of dread, not a tool.
You open it, and it's just a wall of red. Categories you've blown through, percentages you don't recognize. And the app's response is basically, you failed, try harder tomorrow. Which is exactly the shame cycle Klontz is describing.
The research on money stories suggests that until the emotional narrative around money shifts, no app will stick. You can't UX your way out of a childhood script. What you can do is change the tool so it doesn't trigger the script in the first place.
So what does that look like? Let's talk about the envelope system, because it's the oldest low numeracy budgeting tool there is, and it works for exactly the reasons we're describing.
NerdWallet put out a guide to the envelope system last year, and what's interesting is how they frame it. They describe it as tactile and categorical, not numerical. You take physical cash, you put it in envelopes labeled with categories, groceries, dining out, entertainment, and when the envelope is empty, you stop spending. You don't compute percentages. You don't track against a target. You feel the weight of the envelope. It's physical scarcity, not arithmetic.
And that's the insight. The information you need is present tense and sensory. You open the envelope, you see what's left. You don't project into the future, you don't calculate, you don't interpret. The envelope does the work.
There's a version of this that works digitally too. Some people use multiple checking accounts, each with a debit card, each labeled for a category. When the dining out account hits zero, you're done. Same principle, categorical, not numerical. The decision is there money in this account? Not what percentage of my monthly dining budget remains after accounting for the 3 meals I had last week?
And compare that to what Daniel described. He gets a notification that says, you have $47.32 of discretionary spending remaining. That requires him to figure out what counts as discretionary, what $47 buys, whether that's a lot or a little in context. But you have room for a few small electronics. That's a category judgment. He knows what small electronics are. He knows what a few means. The precision is lower, but the actionability is higher.
Precision is useless if the system triggers avoidance. An approximate budget you follow beats a precise budget you ignore. That's not a compromise, that's just math. If you follow a budget that's 80% accurate 100% of the time, you're in better shape than someone with a 99% accurate budget they look at twice a year.
The precision fetish in personal finance is worth naming directly. Apps boast about categorization accuracy to the penny. People agonize over whether a coffee is dining out or entertainment. And none of that matters if the act of engaging with the system is so unpleasant that you stop doing it.
Okay, so the freeze response is real. But what do you actually do about it if you're Daniel? Let's look at 3 approaches that don't require you to become a different person. The first is what financial therapists call values-based budgeting, or sometimes priority-based budgeting. And the reframe is subtle but powerful. Instead of asking, how much can I spend? You ask, what matters to me? The question is narrative, not numerical. You allocate to categories based on values, security, freedom, generosity, adventure, and let the numbers follow the story.
So instead of starting with a spreadsheet and trying to make the numbers work, you start with a paragraph. This month, I want to feel secure, so rent and savings come first. I want to feel connected, so I'll budget for one dinner out with friends. Everything else is flexible. The numbers are still there, but they're embedded in a story, not floating as abstractions.
And this isn't just feel-good language. The financial therapists who work with Klontz's framework use exactly this approach. You surface the money script, I'm bad with money, I'll never have enough, and you rewrite it. The budget becomes the artifact of the new story, not the other way around. You're not budgeting to constrain yourself. You're budgeting to enact your values.
That's a fundamentally different emotional relationship to the same set of numbers. One version says, here are your restrictions. The other says, here's what you care about, and here's how your money reflects that.
The second approach is automation, and this is the ultimate workaround for the numeracy problem. If you never see the numbers, you never have to process them. The pay yourself first model is simple. On payday, automatic transfers move money to savings, to bills, and to a guilt-free spending account. The decision happens once, in a moment of clarity, not 30 times a month in moments of temptation.
NerdWallet's Behavioral Finance Roundup from last year explicitly endorses this for people who find daily engagement aversive. The insight is that willpower is a depletable resource. Every time you have to decide whether to spend money, you're burning willpower. Automation removes the decision. The money that lands in your spending account is already yours to spend. No math, no guilt, no cognitive load.
And you can set this up in an afternoon. Most banks support automatic transfers. You create 3 accounts, bills, savings, spending, and you route the money on payday. After that, the only number you ever need to look at is the balance in your spending account. If it's positive, you're fine. If it's low, you slow down. That's the entire system.
The thing I like about this is that it inverts the usual budgeting logic. Most budgets say, track everything, then figure out what's left. This says, protect what matters, then spend the rest freely. It's abundance framed rather than scarcity framed.
And the shame cycle breaks because there's nothing to fail at. You can't blow your savings if the savings were moved before you ever saw them. You can't miss a bill if bills are on autopay. The system does the responsible thing by default, and you get to be the person who just spends what's in the account.
The third approach is the one Daniel basically invented in his prompt, the narrative budget. Instead of a spreadsheet, you write a short paragraph each month describing your financial life. This month, I want to feel secure, so I'll prioritize rent and savings. I have room for one fun thing, maybe a new book. I'll cook at home most nights. The numbers are still there, but they're embedded in a story.
And here's what's interesting. You can actually make this work as a real system. You write the paragraph at the start of the month. You check in once mid-month, read the paragraph, ask yourself if you're on track. You write a one-sentence reflection at the end. That's 3 interactions with your finances per month, not 30.
Compare that to a traditional budget. Groceries, $400. Dining, $100. Entertainment, $50. That's precise, but it's also abstract. What does $50 of entertainment mean? Is that one concert ticket? 2 streaming services? A video game? The narrative version says, I have room for 1 streaming service and maybe a movie ticket. That's actionable.
And the narrative budget has a hidden advantage. It forces you to think about trade-offs in concrete terms. When you write, I'll cook at home most nights, grab takeout once a week, you're making the trade-off explicit. You're not just assigning numbers to categories, you're describing a life. And that's easier to stick to because it feels like a choice you made, not a restriction imposed on you.
There's a knock-on effect here worth pulling out. The shame cycle we talked about. When you fail at numerate budgeting, you internalize it as a character flaw. I'm bad with money. I'm irresponsible. I can't stick to a budget. But if the problem is a tool mismatch, not a character flaw, then changing the tool should change the outcome. And it often does.
This is where the financial therapy literature gets useful. The money script, I'm bad with money, is one of the most common ones Klontz identifies. And it's self-reinforcing. You believed you're bad with money, so you avoid engaging with money, so your finances get worse, so you have more evidence that you're bad with money. Breaking the cycle means changing the tool, not the person.
If you try a narrative budget and it works, you haven't become a different person. You've just found the system that doesn't trigger the script. The script is still there, but it's not being activated every time you look at your phone.
The other thing about the shame cycle is that it's often gendered and classed in ways that make it worse. Women are socialized to believe they're bad with numbers. People who grew up in households where money was a source of conflict carry that into adulthood. The budgeting app doesn't know any of this. It just shows you a red bar and a frowny face.
The gamification stuff is particularly cruel in this context. You missed your dining budget, so your little digital tree dies, or your streak resets, or whatever. Now you're not just ashamed. You're ashamed and you killed a pixel plant.
Hilbert's making a face. We'll get to that.
I want to pull on the precision thread one more time. There's this assumption in personal finance that more granularity is always better. Track every dollar. Categorize every transaction. Reconcile every penny. And for some people, that's satisfying. But for the person we're describing, it's paralyzing. The cognitive load of perfect tracking exceeds the benefit of perfect information.
And the benefit of perfect information is often overstated anyway. If you know you spend roughly $400 on groceries and roughly $100 on dining out, does knowing it's $412.97 this month actually change your behavior? Probably not. The rough categories are enough to make decisions. The pennies are noise.
So the practical question Daniel's asking, what techniques actually work? I think the answer is some combination of these three. Automate what you can. Use envelopes or multiple accounts for what you can't automate. And replace the spreadsheet with a narrative, either a written paragraph or just a mental model of, here's what I'm doing this month.
Start small. The biggest mistake people make with any new system is trying to overhaul everything at once. Pick one category, dining out, say, and apply the narrative approach to just that. I'll get takeout once a week. Do that for a month. If it sticks, add another category. The system grows with you rather than demanding you grow into it overnight.
There's also a role here for what I call environmental design. If cooking at home is the goal, the friction isn't just financial, it's logistical. Do you have groceries? Do you have a meal plan? Do you have containers for leftovers? The budget is only one part of the behavior chain. Reducing the friction on the desired behavior is often more effective than increasing the guilt on the undesired one.
That's a clinical insight, actually. In behavioral medicine, we talk about prescribing the environment, changing the context so the healthy choice is the easy choice. If you want to cook at home, you need groceries in the fridge and a recipe you know how to make. If those aren't in place, no budget in the world is going to make you cook.
This loops back to the numeracy problem. If cooking at home requires meal planning, and meal planning requires budgeting, and budgeting requires math, you've created a chain of dependencies where the numeracy bottleneck blocks everything downstream. Break the chain. Separate the meal planning from the budgeting. Figure out what you want to eat first, then figure out what it costs. Don't let the numbers gatekeep the behavior.
I want to talk about where this is heading, because there's a technological dimension that's arriving fast. AI-powered financial assistants are getting good enough that the narrative budget could be generated automatically. An LLM reads your bank transactions, translates them into a story, and sends you a paragraph each week. You spent more on dining this week than last. You've got room for one more night out before you hit your usual range. Groceries are on track.
That's basically a translator between numerate systems and literate brains. The AI does the interpretation, and you get the descriptive output. No spreadsheet required.
The emotional work, rewriting your money story, that remains human. The AI can tell you what you spent. It can't tell you what you value. It can't rewrite the script you learned at age 6. That part still requires sitting with yourself and asking what you actually want your money to do.
The pet died constantly. 2014. I worked at a fintech startup called Nudget. We built a budgeting app with a Tamagotchi-like creature that lived or died based on your spending. You overspent on dining, the thing got sick. You stayed under budget, it danced. The idea was positive reinforcement through emotional attachment. What actually happened was people opened the app, saw a dying pixel creature, and deleted the app. Some of them emailed us to say we'd ruined their week.
That's a lot.
We learned that shame plus a dying digital pet isn't a behavior change strategy. The retention numbers were abysmal. I was brought in as a financial literacy trainer, which meant I wrote the copy for the push notifications. Nudget is hungry. Nudget needs you to check your budget. People hated it. The company folded in 16 months.
You've actually worked on exactly the problem we're describing.
I have. And I think you're right about the tools, but I push the insight further. The problem isn't just that budgets are numerate, it's that they're future-oriented. You're asking a verbal brain to simulate a future state with numbers, which is like asking a colorblind person to paint by numbers. The envelope system works because it's present tense. You see what's left right now. That's the real distinction, not narrative versus numbers, but present versus future tense.
present tense budgeting. That's a useful frame.
Nudget failed because it made people feel bad about the future. The pet was dying because of something you hadn't done yet, or something you might not do, or a projection based on your current trajectory. It was anxiety wrapped in a cartoon. The envelope doesn't care about the future. It tells you what's true right now. That's why it works.
The cognitive load isn't about the arithmetic per se. It's about projecting into an abstract future. The numbers are just the medium for that projection.
Right. And most budgeting apps double down on the future. They show you projections, trends, forecasts, if you continue at this rate. That's useful for a certain kind of brain. For the brain we're talking about, it's just more anxiety fuel.
How do you build a present tense digital tool then? If the envelope system works because it's physical and immediate, what's the digital equivalent?
Balance notifications. A daily text that says, you have X in your spending account. That's it. No judgment, no trend line, no comparison to last month. Just the number that matters right now. I set this up for myself 11 years ago, and I've used it ever since.
Wait. You've been running a custom balance notification system for 11 years.
It's a cron job and a Twilio account. Every morning at 7, it checks my spending account balance and texts me the number. If the number is above a threshold I set, the text just says the number. If it's below, it adds heads up. That's the entire system. Two words of commentary, max. I've never once looked at a budget spreadsheet.
You automated the one piece of information you actually need, and you stripped out everything else.
Everything else is noise. I know my bills are paid because they're on autopay. I know my savings are funded because the transfer happens before the text goes out. The only question I need answered is, can I spend money today? And the text answers it. No categories, no percentages, no projections. Just a number and occasionally heads up.
You built this yourself.
Took about 40 minutes. The Twilio integration was the hard part. The cron job is 3 lines. I've changed the threshold twice in 11 years. Once when I moved, once when I got a raise.
That's actually elegant. It's the envelope system reduced to its absolute minimum viable form. One number, one question, zero interpretation.
The other thing I learned at Nudget, and this took me years to articulate, is that financial tools should reduce decisions, not create them. Every category you add, every trend line, every comparison to last month, that's a new decision the user has to make. Should I care about this? Is this bad? Do I need to change something? The balance text creates zero decisions. The number is either fine or it isn't. If it's fine, you move on with your day. If it isn't, you spend less. That's the entire decision tree.
You never felt the need for more granularity? Never wondered where the money was going?
No. If the number at the end of the month was lower than I expected, I'd look at my bank statement and figure out why. That happened maybe twice a year. The rest of the time, I just lived my life. The system handled the responsibility. I handled the living.
This is the set it and forget it model taken to its logical endpoint. One decision made once, enforced automatically. The cognitive load is near zero after setup.
The setup is the catch. You have to know your numbers once, what your bills are, what you want to save, what's left. That's the one time you have to do math. After that, the system runs. Most people never do the setup because the setup is the part that triggers the freeze response. They open the spreadsheet to figure out their numbers, and their brain shuts down.
The bottleneck is still that initial numerate moment.
It is, and I don't have a clever solution for that. At Nudget, we tried to build a setup wizard that asked descriptive questions. How often do you eat out? Not, what's your monthly dining budget? And it helped a little. But eventually, you have to look at your bank balance and your salary and do some arithmetic. The difference is, you only have to do it once.
Once, in a moment of clarity, when you're not also trying to make spending decisions. That's the key. Separate the planning from the doing. Do the math on a Saturday morning when you're calm. Set up the automation. Then never do math again.
That's what worked for me. I can't promise it works for everyone. But I've been running in a cron job and a Twilio text for 11 years, and I've never bounced a payment or blown a budget. The system is stupid and simple, and it doesn't care about my feelings. That's what I needed.
The system is stupid and simple, and it doesn't care about your feelings. That might be the best endorsement of a budgeting tool I've ever heard.
There's something here about the future of these tools. If the problem is the numeracy bottleneck at setup, and the solution is descriptive language plus automation, then the AI financial assistance we mentioned could handle the setup too. You tell an LLM. I want to save for a down payment. I eat out maybe 3 times a week. I don't want to think about this more than once a month. And it builds the automation for you. It does the math, sets up the transfers, sends you the balance text.
The human provides the values and the narrative. The machine handles the numbers. That's the division of labor that actually matches how a literate brain works.
It's not science fiction. The building blocks exist now. Bank APIs, LLMs that can parse natural language, automation platforms. Someone just needs to wire them together in a way that doesn't add a dying pixel pet.
Which brings us back to Daniel's question. The techniques exist. The envelope system, values-based budgeting, automation, narrative budgets, balance notifications. These are all real tested approaches that work with a verbal brain rather than against it. The harder question is whether we can ever fully escape numbers in finance.
I don't think we can, and I'm not sure we should want to. Numbers are useful. They're precise in ways that words aren't. The goal isn't to eliminate numeracy from your financial life, it's to reduce the number of times you have to engage with it. Make the number of moments count, and make them rare.
The emotional work remains the hard part. Rewriting your money story, moving from I'm bad with money, to I use systems that work for my brain. That's not something an app can do for you. But the right tool makes it easier to practice the new story until it sticks.
If you've got a system that works with your brain instead of against it, write in. We'd love to hear it. Daniel's not the only one trying to solve this, and the best ideas usually come from people who figured it out because they had to.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, who apparently solved this problem with a cron job in 2014, and never mentioned it until now.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.